Welcome to the Ghost Rap Podcast. It's fast, it's fun, it's informative. For more details on these stories and to make sure you get daily updates, visit ghostmail.co.za. The Ghost Rap Podcast is brought to you by Forvis Mazars, an internationally integrated partnership operating in over 100 countries and territories, including South Africa, delivering audit and assurance, tax advisory, and consulting services to clients. We kick off this week with MTN, and it really has been fascinating to look at the numbers coming out of their African subsidiaries in the past week or so. It started with MTN Nigeria, where the numbers were downright awful. As a recap, revenue was up 32.6%. Now, that sounds great at first blush, but inflation over the period was 32.8%, so there's actually no real growth there at all. And with EBITDA down by 10.9%, growth in any form appears to be very hard to come by. It's just an ugly set of numbers, really, with MTN Nigeria as the victim of a macroeconomic nightmare, where a significant portion of their capex is denominated in dollars, so the forex losses are hitting the business in-country before they even get to hurt the MTN group numbers. But then along came MTN Ghana, and suddenly the narrative wasn't so bad around Africa. Growth in service revenue for the 6 months to June was 31.2%, and that is well ahead of average inflation for the period of 23.9%. EBITDA, that increased 31.3%, so margins were pretty much maintained at a very juicy 56.1%. Now that's a whole lot more like it. And the balance sheet looks good too, with finance costs down 44.9% and the dividend up 30%. They even managed to outpace the depreciation of the Ghanaian currency against the dollar, so there was growth in dollar terms as well. Now, MTN Ghana's attributable value is lower than MTN Nigeria in the MTN group story, unfortunately, so it doesn't fix the problem, but it sure does help. As the icing on top of this two-layer cake, where one of the two layers didn't taste very good at all, we find MTN Uganda. And what a sweet story that is. For the 6 months to June, MTN Uganda grew its service revenue by 20.4%. Now again, at first blush, that sounds, you know, so much worse than MTN Nigeria, but the difference here is that inflation in Uganda was only 3.4% over the period. So that is actually tremendous growth. EBITDA increased by 22.4%, so there's also margin expansion on top of that growth. And amazingly, Uganda's currency actually strengthened against the dollar over the period, so MTN Uganda achieved genuinely impressive growth on global terms. And unlike we often see in Africa in the telecoms industry, even the free cash flow story looked solid, with capex only 8.6% higher versus net profit up 29%. Africa gets spoken of as one place, yet the underlying markets could not be more different. And if only MTN Nigeria was more like Uganda or even Ghana, how different the MTN share price would look as well. Instead, we have MTN Group trading at around 75 Rand a share at time of recording, down more than 41% in the past 12 months. Ouch. Let's move on to ArcelorMittal, one of the most volatile and risky companies on the local market. When you are dealing with high fixed costs in a business, any knock to revenue has a magnified effect on the bottom line. This is known as operating leverage. In good times, it's your best friend, because the fixed costs stay at that level, even when the revenue is basically falling from the sky like much needed rain after a drought. But when there's no revenue, the fixed costs are still there, which is why it hurts so badly in tough times. High operating leverage is a riskier model, as small moves in revenue drive large moves in profit. At ArcelorMittal, revenue for the 6 months to June fell by just 3%. A technology platform company with great margins would probably not even notice that. But in a marginal business like this with high operating leverage, it was enough to drive the headline loss to a rather terrifying 150 cents per share, way worse than 40 cents per share in the comparable period. For reference, the share price at time of recording is 1.19 or 119 cents. In other words, the company is on a price-earnings multiple of negative 2.5, which is definitely not something you're going to see every day. This tells you that the situation there is desperate, and it's not going to get better unless either Chinese demand picks up, and don't hold your breath for that, or South African infrastructure spending picks up to meet the steel demand. There, we can only hope that perhaps this GN euphoria will make a difference. What's at stake here? Sadly, far more than the money in portfolios. They are trying to save the most problematic part of their business that has 3,500 direct jobs and 80,000 more in the value chain. It really really doesn't look good, and ArcelorMittal is a serious concern. It's easy to assume that schools are a license to print money, but the reality is quite different. Much like in airlines, it really is the last few bums on seats that deliver the profit margin. Until that point, it's all about recovering overheads. The fixed cost point that I explained earlier in ArcelorMittal is relevant here as well, because they have a lot of operating leverage in schools. When Curro's share price was the talk of the town at close to $50 a share in 2015-2016, the belief was that government schooling was falling apart and the private sector would make a fortune as a result. Well, people were half right, at least. Here we are at under 12 Rand per share, with the market learning a terribly hard lesson about getting carried away about growth. Thanks to middle-class immigration, among other problems, the schools did not fill up to the level expected, and hence Curro had to take other approaches, like trying to make money from fees rather than volumes. Along came a pandemic, of course, which then caused all kinds of other havoc, leading to Curro needing to raise money from the market, and that is a big part of why the share price is so far below the pre-pandemic level of 17 Rand a share, because there are now so many more shares in issue. The latest Curro trading statement reveals that at least earnings have made it back to 2020 levels, coming in at between 38.4 and 42.0 cents for the 6 months to June. In 2020, it was 38.7 cents for the period. There is still some way to go, though, until a recovery to 2019 levels, which came in at headline earnings per share of 50 cents for the interim period, so a long way off that, but they are getting there at least. And remember, by using headline earnings per share, or HEPS, to judge the recovery, you are correctly taking into account the fact that additional shares were issued during the pandemic. This is why investors use HEPS and not headline earnings. It's all about the value per share, not the total value of the company. After all, a share is what you are buying as an investor. And that's a wrap. Please remember that nothing you hear on the Ghost Rap podcast should be taken as advice. Please do your own research and visit ghostmail.co.za for more insights into the market.